Hello and welcome. It's the Outspoken Beauty Podcast with me, Nicola Bonn. Now, before we get into this week's interview and product recommendations, just had to tell you that I had some hot flashes yesterday. If you follow me on Instagram, I took a picture of myself during one of them. Which I think was a bit weird. It was so weird. I was in a meeting with someone and I just went boiling. And I was like, oh, it's so hot in here, isn't it? I'm so sweaty and boiling and weird. And she said, no, it really is not hot in here. And then it happened a few more times. And my friend was like, are you perimenopausal? Now, I'm 38. I mean, I have not even begun to think about the menopause, but I could be. I actually could be perimenopausal. And it's this whole world. I mean, I have interviewed Meg Matthews on the podcast and she told me a lot about it. But still, I feel like it's this world I don't know about. But I do know that for women who are going through the menopause or the perimenopausal bit, it can be bloody awful. Like I've heard horror stories. So I really want to learn more about it because, you know, I might be about to experience it, but also just like what's on offer, the options, you know, how you can get through the menopause. And so I'm definitely going to do another episode about it because, you know, I know you might be listening and you'll be in your early 30s or late 20s thinking, seriously, this does not apply to me. But I think as women, it applies to all of us. And actually our hormones, you know, when we get pregnant, they change. And when we get menopausal and all these stages in our lives, I think it's really good just to have the knowledge so we prepare ourselves, because I think sometimes we live in kind of blissful ignorance. So there you go. First hot flashes done. So let me tell you a bit about this episode. I was going to say this episode's hero. I don't know why. This episode's guest. Her name is Sarah Lindsay. Now, Sarah is an Olympian. She is an Olympian. She's done the whole Olympic thing from when she was really young, the intense training to going out. She's a speed skater. She had a really, really intense time up to the age of 30 in the Olympic world. And you're going to hear all about that. And after that, she had this moment when she was going to give up. She wasn't going to do the skating anymore. What would come next for her? And that's when she started this fitness, well-being exercise brand called Raw Fitness. And her story, it's really fascinating, I think, because she's somebody who lived this life that suddenly changed, and then she started a business, and how did she do that? But also her take on health and well-being, I think, is fascinating. You know, I've told you before, I do not exercise. I eat a lot of chocolate. I do not live a good lifestyle. And I think chatting to Sarah kind of showed me, actually, it's bloody important. Actually, the whole menopause thing, you know, protecting yourself for older age, if nothing else, we should be exercising for that. Anyway, I'm giving away too much from the interview. Without further ado, here is Sarah Lindsay, Olympian, an amazing woman. She's going to inspire you so much. Sarah Lindsay, welcome on the Outspoken Beauty Podcast.
Good morning. Thank you.
Now, anything goes here. I mean, you can literally say anything you want in the world. So this is the
You've said
to,
it now.
And you can't honestly. Some of the things that go on in this room, if only you knew.
Okay, fine.
But of course, I want to know, sometimes with some people, I have to start at the beginning. And with you, that's really important because you are an Olympian and I've never met an Olympian before.
Oh,
so
well.
I think, what does it take to be an Olympian? Tell me a bit about childhood leading up to that moment when you were skating in front of everyone at the Olympics.
I think for me, I was very hyperactive as a child. And I think my parents sent me to every sports club going, everything possible, before and after school, I think to run off some energy and to give me something to focus on. And I think to give themselves a little rest. So for that hour that I was, you know, doing gymnastics or athletics or something, they could just sit in the stands and close their eyes, I think. My poor parents. And then I think because I did lots of sport very young, I think it's when you develop your sort of physical skills. And so I was generally quite good at most sports. And then I got to a point where I had to start choosing which ones I was going to do because I couldn't do everything anymore. So out of figure skating and speed skating, I chose speed skating. And I think it was maybe gymnastics, athletics, I chose athletics. Basically, I just picked the ones that I was best at.
Yeah, of course.
Obviously. And then speed skating in the end just took over really as my main sport. It was the one that I enjoyed the most and the one that I achieved the quickest in. And it's a real sort of community. And you'd go to competitions abroad quite frequently and stuff. So it was really, really good fun. And I got fairly good quite quickly. I think so, I was just tall, you know, I was just bigger than everybody else my age. So I was good quick, basically. And then you get lots of help and lots of attention. And, you know, my whole club, everybody was going to the Olympics and everybody was on, you know, the Team GB. So it just seemed like a natural progression for me, really.
So your childhood must have been quite intense. I mean, I suppose it's a bit like a child actor or something like that. You're training hard, aren't you? What age did you start really focusing in and really getting going with all that?
I think when I was about 12, 13, it was quite obvious that I was going to be good.
Yeah.
And then when I finished school, basically, I was going to college and I was training and I was also working because I had to leave home to skate more.
Yeah.
So, and be where the team was. So I was also working a little bit to help fund myself and everything. I mean, it just wasn't going right. I was just sort of pulled in too many directions and I decided to not continue with my studies and to focus on skating for a year and see where I got to. And then I'd make a decision about my education. And so I think that was a bit of a turning point for me. I think I was about 17 when it was, this is all or nothing now.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? So, yeah, I took a little chance and went for it.
And it paid off.
Yeah.
Is all or nothing something that's carried on in your life?
I think so.
Is that what you're about?
I think I just, I mean, maybe not, but I think I need to be passionate about what I do. I need to be interested and I need to care about it. Otherwise, you're just not motivated in the same way. And it's very difficult to find something that you care about as much as winning the Olympics.
Oh, yes.
When that's your goal from a child. And it was the thing that I always wanted to do. And it was all I cared about for years and years and years. And then when that's over, finding something else that really gets you and makes you get up in the morning is tough, actually. I sound a little spoiled.
No, but... no, you don't. And I was going to say that. So you've reached, I mean, not many people in life manage to reach their dream. I mean, you got to the Olympics. That is huge. Did you win any gold or anything?
No.
No, but just...
So actually, I didn't. I know it sounds really, it sounds a little bit sad, but... You know, I always felt like I failed, which sounds terrible. And everybody will say, no, you went to the Olympics. But I didn't do it to go to the Olympics. I went to win. And I didn't. So I'd never achieved my goals, actually. It was a great journey, but I never actually got there. So
isn't that funny? I mean, to me, and I'm sure to people listening, they're thinking, just as everyone says to you, just to get there is the most, it's massive. I mean, what a brilliant thing to do. Do you never feel proud of yourself for what you achieved in that time?
I do. And I think people's reaction to finding out that you're an Olympian is nice and it helps sort of reinforce that. And I am proud. I'm proud of lots of things that I did. And actually, I think my biggest achievement, more so than the medals, I won other medals, just not Olympic medals.
Yeah.
More than medals was coming back from injury and, you know, achieving things like that that other people don't necessarily see. That, you know, really tested you.
Yeah.
And tested your character and your resilience and how strong you really are. And those are the things that I've carried on to my life after sport.
So tell me, you've done the Olympics and you've done all that. And then you wake up and you're like, oh, shit, it's over. What's
basically
next? Is that how you felt? And were you depressed at that time?
Oh, for a good year. For
really?
A good year.
Why did it end? Was it just age or was it a decision? Was it injury?
Well, I was only doing it for the Olympics. The next Olympics, obviously 4 years down the line,
yeah.
I was skating the fastest I'd ever skated. My last ever race was the fastest I ever went. And I actually said before I went on for that race, I said, if I skate the British record, I quit. I retire. And my coach looked at me, he's like, are you sure? Because I just got to this point where I was, you know, I was really flying and I was a real contender. And I just said, yeah. This is it for me. And I did it only a bit, you know, by a couple of tenths, but yeah. I did it and I waved goodbye and got off and I never got on again.
That's crazy. When you made that decision, was that something you thought about for ages or was it just
no.
Like...
that moment.
What?
Yeah. I just think you can really overthink things and you can always have another year. You can always say, oh, I just want to do one more year or, you know, the World Championships, for example, was in the UK and that's always incredible to do a big championships in front of your home crowd. And you look, you know, I went to that event and I watched it and there were quite a few retirements and it was kind of open for my event. And I watched it and, you know, the people winning, I thought, God, that should be me, which is always, it's always difficult. But then you don't know what's going to happen.
No,
you know,
don't.
I could have fallen over and, you know, had a horrible injury and not been able to do the job I do now. So I just, you can't have regrets.
So the birth of Raw.
Yeah.
So how did this happen? So now, I mean, you have... managed, you have succeeded to create this fitness empire that's so much more than fitness.
Yeah.
So how did it come about?
Well, I got into the industry and I learnt my trade because although I was an Olympian and I lived in a lab basically, you know, you have lots of physiology and so your understanding is good. Mm. And I had been doing stuff before, obviously, but, you know, teaching people to move and in a very different way. And the people that come to you just say, I mean, we're based in the city. So people that have, you know, maybe never exercised, never moved, have, you know, not ideal lifestyles. And, you know, it's going to affect their recovery and their ability to maybe lose fat or gain muscle or whatever the goal might be, is very different to training figure skaters to improve their jump rotation.
Of course, you know? Yeah.
It's a whole different thing. So, you know, I got into the industry and I learnt my trade. And then once I was confident in what I was doing and I'd learnt the industry and I saw what was out there and I saw, I think, what was missing, I wanted to create something different and, in my eyes, very special.
And what was missing?
I think, this sounds terrible, but I think service a lot of the time. You know, my team, I don't have any freelancers. It's just my team who are incredible. I mean, we interviewed 200 people for the first 13 spaces, and that was after doing CVs.
Wow.
So I'm, you know, supremely confident in the people that I have working with us. So that's a big part of it, getting really, really good people to look after your clients, because I can't do it all. I can't look after hundreds of people. So I like to meet everyone. So everyone that comes in, I'll do their consultation and talk to them and get so that when you're on the gym floor, you know who everybody is and you can say hi and see how they're doing and try and keep track of what's going on. But ultimately, the team look after my clients. So I want the best team.
So you see, you've got the Olympian, you've got the kind of vocab, haven't you, going on? Why do people come to you? I mean, there's, you know, is it to do with more health or is it to do with the way that they look or is it obviously a bit of both?
I think most of the time it's because of how they look. Yeah. Most people want, you know, we put out these pictures of the transformations and I'm not too keen on the transformation tag. It's, you know, I've kind of invited that, I guess, but
yeah.
I'm not too keen on that tag because to me that's what everybody comes for, so that's what we deliver. That's just good training. That's good personal training for me. You know, not everybody, but, you know, 90% of people come because they want to change how they look initially. And that's what they ask for and that's what they want. But I think the thing they take away from it the most is how they feel. So people come in and they're not feeling good and maybe they're self-conscious or maybe they're tired or struggling with health issues and, you know, their sort of strength and conditioning will affect them in their everyday lives. And they come in feeling bad and they leave feeling amazing. And that's the most rewarding part, especially, I mean, obviously, I'm a bit of a girl's girl. So obviously when the women come in feeling like this and they leave feeling incredible. And I think the confidence that you get from being physically strong and being healthy and having control of your body crosses over into everything else in your life. And you see people change.
I think it's fascinating because I mean, and I saw one of your Instagram posts the other day and you said people shouldn't be ashamed to say I want to lose weight because at the moment there's a kind of opposite movement going on. Body positivity, no more body shaming, be proud to be you, which I absolutely love. But actually, does that mean there's a bit of a backlash against people who want to be thinner or want to be more toned?
I think people don't want to say it anymore. People don't. And I don't really, you know, because It's not the most important thing. How you look isn't the most important, or how, you know, you look to somebody else. It's how you feel about yourself that matters. There is a movement going sort of against that, which I completely understand. And, you know, I want to empower women. I want women to feel good about themselves. And that definitely happens in-house. But getting the message right is very difficult. And I think it's not a backlash against, you know, me necessarily or what we do, but I think maybe the more extreme Instagram pictures and the things that aren't real, basically.
And it's that fine line between what's healthy and what's not. And I suppose one of the important things for you is not to let women get obsessed, and men, obviously, because I think there's that, you know, I want to be healthy, I want to be strong. And then, you know, there's that thing that people are scared of, which is eating disorders and an unhealthy obsession with your appearance. And do you have a way of stopping people going too far?
I mean, I think we have great communication. So you have a team of people looking after you at my place. So you have your physio, you have your nutritionist, and you have your trainer. So you do have a lot of people, you know, in your corner looking after you. And it's a very open forum, and everybody can talk and, you know, encourage people to say what they really feel and what they think and what their real goals are. But I think it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you don't know and you don't see from the outside what is and isn't unhealthy. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's unhealthy to take sort of, you know, take a look at what you eat and care about that. And, you know, I mean, I don't eat junk food, and there's nothing unhealthy about the fact that I don't want to eat something that's not nutritious.
Yeah. Oh, you know, absolutely.
And I never would. I wouldn't eat, you know, a disgusting chain burger or something. Because for me, that's not a treat. I don't want to do that. You know, I care about my body a lot, and it's obviously my job as well.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with really caring about that stuff.
No, and where did I read? Oh, it was, do you know The Londoner? She writes a blog and stuff, and she was saying that the way we see a treat is all wrong, because actually a treat should be something that really benefits us and makes us feel amazing. And actually, yeah, you know, eating a burger isn't a treat for our body at all. It's just the way we think of it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mm. That's exactly how I feel. If it makes you feel better, then, you know, maybe fine. But if it makes you feel bad after you've done it, then that's not a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you can feel it. If you eat something, if I eat a lot of sugar, I don't feel good and I get tired afterwards. But it's mm-hmm. like an addiction. What's your recommendation, like little healthy food tips maybe that someone can incorporate easily in a very busy day?
I think it's being prepared. I think it's knowing what you're going to eat. If you're hungry, I mean, if I'm hungry, I will eat the closest food to me. You know, we're emotional eaters, and if our blood sugars drop and we're tired and we're hungry, we will eat anything that we find, and we'll just find the nearest food and eat it. So I think being prepared and knowing what, if you want to control your food, you know, if you want to avoid certain things, then if it's already in your bag or you have a healthier alternative with you, you will eat that instead.
Yep.
If you haven't got that with you, you will just eat whatever you fancy, whatever you think you need, you know, because it's that sort of point of desperation where... Yeah. You'll grab anything. So I totally understand that.
Yeah, it's a planning thing there.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that you can do is know what you're going to have and plan it and have it with you. I know that, you know, can be a bit annoying, but it doesn't take long.
So what's, like today, for example, what's your own personal food plan?
Okay, well, all might see you saw me wheeling a bag in today. And
is that full of food?
Half of that is food. I've got a bit of a bad neck. And so carrying a big bag around with me today was a bad idea. So yeah, most of that wheelie bag is food. So I'm staying in town tonight. So I've made 2 days worth of food. And I have two Tupperware boxes. So I have two lunches. And there's chicken in two of them and fish in the other two with vegetables and sweet potato. Oh, I sound like holier than thou right now.
No, I mean, you do a bit, but I get why. And I am thinking...
It's not very relatable sometimes.
No, but it is related. It can be done. I think that's a really good thing. I think our attitude to food, I think if you... Like what I found in those few weeks of doing that diet is once I started making a few changes, it did become easier.
Yeah.
But it was just sticking to them. Fitness is another thing altogether because, you know, for me, I tell myself that I do not have time to be fit. When in my life, you know, I've got my kids, I've got to get up early, I've got to deal with them, I've got to go to work, come back, put them to bed, spend time with my husband. Where do I have time for fitness?
Well, I think it just has to be a priority. And maybe you have other priorities in your life that are more important for you. But if it's something that you want to do and you want to address, then it just has to become a bit more important. Mm. And obviously, you know, everybody's busy. Everybody's, you know, I'm in the city and we have people come in and they've got kids and they're working long hours and stuff, but they will find that time. And that's something that we focused on. And the results that we get are done with 3 times a week training for 1 hour. It's 1 hour 3 times a week.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, maybe you don't have that, but it's trying to get the biggest sort of bang for your buck, if you like. Yeah. I don't believe in having to train, you know, every day or training twice a day sometimes. And it's not just about a calorie in versus calorie out situation at our place. So you're trying to get a result from people who are busy.
I like the idea of 3 hours a week leading to those results.
That's all you've got to do.
Let's talk about muscles, because you did another Instagram post where you are looking at beautifully muscular. Oh. And do you find people, I mean, do you get trolls saying, oh, that's disgusting, women shouldn't look like that? Because you did say something along those lines.
Yeah, I have had that. Oh, I think I know the post you yeah. mean, where, yeah, I did look quite muscly. It's just the way the picture was shot, yeah. I think. Or, you know, I'm in the middle of a training session doing bicep curls and, you know, I swell up. I do have some muscle, but my muscles swell up when I train. Yeah. So it was a particularly muscly looking picture. But in the same day, I could stand with my hands on my hips and pull my elbows back and my arms will look skinny. You know?
But do you think there's a bit of sexism there that, like, men are, you know, want to be all muscly, but women are kind of looked down on if they're too muscly?
I don't think so. I think everybody wants different things, you know, it's different tastes and people like certain things and don't like certain things. There's definitely been a movement more towards looking athletic in the last, like I've said it before, but since London Olympics, I think I've seen a huge shift in what people are coming in and asking for and people wanting to look more athletic and look stronger, which is nice.
Healthy.
Know? Yeah, that's absolutely.
So, well, we had a little chat about this before. Just like, this is actually a beauty podcast and we haven't really
touched on it.
No, but we've talked a lot about fitness and positivity. But I always like to know, I mean, you are glowing and I don't know whether that is from what you're eating in your exercise or whether you use damn good beauty products. I think it's a mixture.
Maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah. Are you into beauty? I mean, what do you like using?
So it's a funny thing because as an athlete, I wasn't at all. And I wasn't a glamorous person in the slightest. I mean, I barely brushed my hair. Well, there's no point you're wearing a crash helmet all day. I just get all sweaty, so I just walk around in a cap all the time, and then, you know, you're wearing a cap so you can't really see your face, so what's the point of bothering with too much makeup or anything like that? So I didn't really start, you know, taking any care of my appearance really until I retired.
I feel like you were almost in this kind of not extended childhood almost until you were 30.
Oh, without a doubt. It's an institution, and You're in this bubble and this team and nothing else matters.
No.
And you don't really know anybody else. You just know the people you're seeing every day because you're there all day. It's all you do. So you don't do anything other than skate. And that was for a long time. You know, that was 17 years of that being my life. So, and that's all you know. So yeah, I was maybe.
Yeah. So anyway, you came out of that and you discover beauty.
Yeah, I think so. I think our industry can be a little more glamorous. Mm. And I was always quite shy as well, believe it or not. And I think, and I was a little bit shy of being muscular and looking different, basically, to most people. And then in this industry, that's celebrated.
Yeah.
And people are like, wow, you've got these legs. And I was like, oh, that's a good thing all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, so... But then I liked it. You know, I like trying to look nice and I like doing my hair and you know, makeup and things. So, you know, I do have there's a few things that I do now because I'm so blonde. I mean, my hair is highlighted, but it's still really blonde. And I'm really fair. So my eyebrows are blonde. My eyelashes are blonde. My skin is really white. So I'm basically all one colour. So I think most of what goes into my sort of beauty regime is the prep to look natural when
That's
I'm
so
not.
Funny. That's so funny.
So yeah, the fake tan and...
What fake tan do you use? It's so natural. Natural.
Do you know what this is? I mean, I've tried everything, and the thing that has served me the best is actually just Dove. Just this Dove. I can't remember. It's called like Touch of Sun or something.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, a Boots off the shelf, like a fiver or
cheap
something
and
like
cheerful.
That. Yeah, but it's so good. It doesn't smell. It doesn't leave streaks because it's like a gradual tanner.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my absolute. But, yeah, I just put it on like normal moisturiser.
Yeah.
So
don't have to worry about the streaks.
A little bit of a colour to me.
And what about your
orange.
Face? Using that on your face as well?
So, yeah, the person I see for facials will hate the fact that I use this on my face. But, yeah, no, I do. I use it on my face as well. And then just bronzer.
What bronzer?
Charlotte Tilbury.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. But then, yeah, I dye my eyebrows. I dye my eyelashes.
Because your eyebrows are amazing. Do you have your eyebrows
actually
done?
They're microbladed.
I was going to ask you about that because I'm considering getting my microblade. Does it hurt?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a tattoo. They're tattoos, you know, but it's tiny little scratches. And you have numbing cream and stuff, so it wasn't so... I mean, it probably hurts more to have them waxed or plucking them.
Oh, that's
okay
then.
So, yeah, it's no big deal.
And did they go super dark afterwards?
Yeah, so you have a week where you walk around, you know, looking ridiculous. I mean, you feel like you have to explain it to everybody. And actually, I walk... So I had my eyes lasered a couple of years ago, but... So I still have glasses. So I wore my glasses, basically, because the rim hid them. Yeah. So
oh, this is a good idea.
I just get some fake glasses.
I was going to say, I'll just get some fake ones and wear those.
Yeah, and that covers it up.
It's a brilliant idea. Yeah, because that's the bit I'm a bit worried about.
Yeah, and then people will just talk about your glasses and they won't even notice your eyebrows.
I'd be like, why is Nicola wearing glasses?
But they're just really dark and really shiny for a week. Yes. That's all. So you can deal with that. And it lasts, you know, I mean, it's been probably a year and a half or something.
It's amazing. And it is the perfect shape. I mean,
yeah,
it's just,
you get to choose that a little bit as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then do you get your eyelashes dyed then?
Yeah, I have to get them dyed. Yeah. They're blonde as well, like a mole. So yeah, it's absolutely a necessity for me.
That's hilarious. But you've done it so well. You look very, very natural. And what kind of, you've got beautiful skin. Do you not have to answer this? Have you ever had cosmetic stuff done or is this all natural?
No, I wouldn't want to mess with your face. No, I don't mean lots of people have lots of things done. But I have a couple of people that I see for hydrafacial. So I have a hydrafacial done. I try and go every 6 weeks, but it's more maybe every 2 months.
Yeah.
And my skin was awful when I was skating. So yeah, really awful. So I get quite a lot of compliments on my skin now, which is so
amazing.
Nice.
You've just got that glow.
And it's been the thing that you've been self-conscious about your whole life, my whole teens and 20s, for it to be the thing that everybody, you know, compliments you on is a really, really lovely thing. So I have hydrofacials done at a place called Waterhouse Young, and they're just so lovely in there. They really look after you and they give you a lot of confidence in what they're doing. I don't know if you've ever had a hydrofacial.
Do you know I haven't? So I'm imagining water being shot at my face at high speed.
Oh, no. So it's kind of gross when you talk about it, but they have, and this is going to sound so unscientific and not technical at all, but basically they suck all the crap out of your skin.
Oh, okay.
So they put this suction thing on over your face, they exfoliate, put this suction thing on over your face and pull all the dirt out of your skin.
I love the idea of this. It keeps it really clear
so you don't get breakouts.
Do you see the dirt afterwards?
Yeah, it's gross.
Wow.
And I think the first one is obviously going to be the most disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I see a guy called Shane Cooper, and he does, and again, I'm going to say this completely wrong, but he puts these metal things, I think, I can't remember what it's called, but basically it's collagen boosting. So
yes.
It looks like you come out looking like you've had fillers. Then he puts these metal things on your cheeks and he sort of draws them up, and it's like tiny little electric current things on your face. You'd have to look it up because I have no idea what he's doing. And it's completely bespoke, and he just decides, he looks at your face and says, right, you need this. But you come out and your cheeks are full. And he does this sort of, he takes all the sort of dead skin and like fuzz hair off your face. So it makes you look a little bit Instagram. It's quite incredible. Wow. And then your makeup goes on completely flawless.
Yeah.
Because I'm blonde, I guess I'm a little bit, maybe a bit fuzzy.
Well, I mean, I'm just plain pubic.
Oh, shame.
Honestly, when you're dark like me, you're so lucky.
Well, maybe this is the answer then.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the thing with blondes. So I think blondes tend to be a little bit furrier.
I agree. Sometimes, yeah.
So not hairy, but just maybe fur.
But furry and velvety and nice.
Oh, God.
We're
turning this into a positive. It's amazing.
And what cleanser and stuff do you use?
So I've recently found a company called Abaji.
I do know Abaji.
But basically, the people at Waterhouse Young, I get it from them. I don't think you can buy it off the shelf. I think it has to come through a dermatologist. Yeah. And I get it through them. So, but it's literally been a lifesaver because my skin is so dry.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a bit of a game changer for me.
Yeah, actually, I've just had Mother Pucker. Do you know Mother Pucker, Anna Whitehouse?
Oh yes, I have seen that.
She's on actually at the moment on the podcast, and she uses Abaji Medical, and she said it's really, really good for her skin.
Yeah, try it.
Well, I could talk to you all day. You're brilliant. Thank you. You've inspired me. I do meet so many different people doing this podcast. I think that's what I love about it. But no, Sarah was really, really inspiring for me. And she's really, I think she's made me rethink a lot of things about my life. So I hope that was useful for you as well. Now, product recommendations. I've got an exciting one. If you are a fan of Emma Hardy Moringa Balm, now I've talked about this probably for my entire beauty career. It was one of the first products when I started being a beauty journalist that I absolutely fell passionately in love with. If you don't know what Moringa Balm is, it's this kind of quite solid, oily balm. It smells heavenly. You get a bit and you rub it in your hands and you rub it in your face and get your makeup off, and then you take it off with a hot cloth. It's, you know, there are plenty of similar products out there, but for me, there's always been something special about Emma Hardy's one. Some dermatologists would say that having a cleanser with a fragrance, you know, Sam Bunting would say it's an absolute no-no. We should be using simple things on our skin. light a candle. She said when I interviewed her, if you want a nice smell, light a candle, use something without a fragrance. But I have never had an issue with Emma Hardy's Moringa Balm. In fact, I always think it makes my skin really moisturised and really nice. So if you are a fan, you're going to love this because there's a new sister product to Moringa Balm and it's called a Moringa Light Gel. Now, it's basically, being honest with you, it's pretty much the same product with the same smell and the same ingredients. What Emma's done is she's removed the beeswax, which is what gives it that kind of the balm, the heaviness. So this becomes a much lighter consistency. You can get it out with a pump. When it comes out in your hand, it looks like a gel. And as you apply it to your skin, it kind of turns into a very soft, oily balm. And because of the pump dispenser, you can use it in the shower. You could use it with your Moringa Balm. You could use it as your first cleanse. I actually think it's, if you haven't got the budget, you could use it as an alternative to Moringa Balm because I've tested it on a full face of makeup and I found that massaging it into to my eyes and my skin, it does the same job as the balm. But if you want something with a slightly different consistency, a bit less heavy, maybe if you've got oily skin or you've got, you know, maybe if you're a man listening, this might be something you'd enjoy using more. Now, the other product I have been using loads in the past few weeks and I'm sure it's been mentioned before on this podcast, but I wanted to go into a bit more detail about it. It's the Hourglass Highlighter. It's like in this silver, big prism shaped tube and you wind it up and it is one of the nicest highlighters I've used. What I tend to do is I do it almost like a little angle. So I do the top of my eyebrow, then I go out and I do the top of my cheekbone, then going down over my cheekbone and I blend it in and it just gives the most beautiful highlight. The other thing you can do with it actually, once you've applied your cover up under your eyes, you can just put the highlighter just under the bit where, you know, like where your bags would be. Haven't we all got them? Just that little bit underneath. Apply a bit of the highlighter there and it gives this really healthy glow. I am in love with Hourglass. I really am. And I keep saying this. I will tell you if ever I'm being paid by a brand to say something. I'm genuinely not. I just think their products are really, really well thought out, well put together. And they do the trick. They do the job. You can trust them. So really, if you're looking for a really nice highlighter, it's not those liquid drops, it's a solid one, but one that is beautiful. Do give it a go. That is all for this episode. ShareWeb is back on Wednesday. I've got a whole lineup. I've got all these guests I've been interviewing I want to tell you about. It's just some brilliant, brilliant conversations coming up on the podcast. I say it every week, but please, if you get a chance, give us a review on iTunes because it's just great for us. If we get some good reviews, it's brilliant. And tell people, the more people that listen, the better. And if you want all the latest, what's going on behind the scenes, etc., it's @OutspokenBeautyNicola on Instagram. I'll see you soon.